You're listening to the Hustle Podcast with Justin Harrison.
My first question is, what are some of the biggest opportunities for people to start making passive income?
I think that the concept of passive income is sometimes misunderstood. People think like, if I own a rental property, it's passive income. There's actually never truly passive income. Everything requires a bit of effort or money or something to get it started. The way I like to think about passive income is non-earned income, right?
Okay.
So you don't have to physically, constantly exchange time and labor for that money.
Right.
I think the idea, and the reason why I want to make this distinction, because I think a lot of people think there's this thing that you don't have to exchange anything for, and income just comes at you. There's no such thing. If you own a property, you're going to have to manage it.
Right.
If you own a share portfolio, you're getting dividends off your shares, you're going to have to check that portfolio from time to time and make sure the investments are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I don't believe there's truly anything totally passive, but there are things that are slightly more passive than others.
Okay.
So the question then is, what can you do that you can basically either invest into, use money
right.
to generate income so that you don't have to use time and labor? Or the question is, if you don't have the money, what can you create with time and labor that can create money ongoing?
You're right.
So that's really the thing. So what I say to people is, you need to understand where you're at. If you're wanting to create passive income and you don't have money, you're going to have to use time.
Right.
If you have money, you probably don't want to leverage time because it's going to be an inefficient use of your time. Rather use money. So if you're sitting on some money, probably the best things to do is to invest into dividend stocks, possibly invest into some kind of small business like a vending machine business. It's not completely passive. You've got to go fill it once in a while, but it's not something you have to sit and actually physically do every sale.
Okay.
Things like owning property, things like owning very key pieces of real estate like parking lots. Very good passive form of income, right? That's all using money as a vehicle. When you go to the other side, which is where I probably advise most people go, is exchange time. Take time and figure out what can I take that I already know and do and package it in a way that I can sell it on repeat. So in your case, for example, you've been making cakes for 30 years. You must have some pretty decent knowledge about making cakes.
Yes.
Maybe you could write a recipe book. Maybe you could create a course on how to make cakes. Maybe you could do a cheat sheet on how to make cakes very cheaply and inexpensively at home for your kids' birthday parties. And that's a course or a PDF that you sell. You create it once you put the labor in.
Right.
Okay. And then once you've got the product then is just selling on repeat. So in my case, I started creating passive forms of income probably in like the age of 26, 27. I wanted to get off the grid of having to constantly work for money. So I created Excel template spreadsheets in the day. I created pieces of software. I wrote books. I did courses and I put those online. And some of those things only make, to this day, only make $50 or $60 a month. It's not a hell of a lot of money, but I've got 100 of those that over the years are making $50, $60, $70 a month. And it adds up to a considerable amount of money. So my advice to most people looking to create passive income is figure out what you know that other people might not know. Figure out how to package it as a product, something that you can create once off and sell it on repeat, right? So I always say like the typical examples of this is music. A recording artist will record a song once and earn off it multiple times as it sells. Same with authors of books, right? So you write the book once, and it keeps selling. And that is passive income. And I believe those are the two best avenues of creating passive income. And my preference is always to leverage time first. Leverage the time first.
I agree with you.
There are, like, in where I'm at in my journey, I don't leverage time anymore. I leverage money.
Money.
Because my time is more valuable to me than money at this point. Okay. Right? But if you don't have the money, then use the time.
Use the time.
And it's a great place to start. Right? Your daughter's doing TEFL teaching online?
Yes.
She should go and create a course on how to do TEFL teaching online.
Oh, that's
the She best. Should write a checklist on what you need to do in order to do that. Create that course and go and sell on. Even if you sell it online for $5, make it cheap, make it inexpensive. If you get 100 people buying it, there's $500 in pocket you never had before.
Yes.
And if it comes at you every month, all of a sudden, you've earned that considerable amount of money over the year. And the next year, and the next year, and the next year. This is passive income. Right? I can, on my phone, I've created apps historically that I make $2 every time somebody buys the app or downloads the app. But okay. We've had millions of downloads over, 12 years.
That's interesting.
Right?
That's interesting.
So that's passive income. And I still don't understand why people find this to be such a difficult concept, because it really just comes back to one thing. Get away from exchanging time and effort for money. Stop being a money slave. Create passive income.
100%. What is the best advice you would give the youth of today, 18 and over, who are about to join the working class with regard to business, finance, and how to build a solid foundation?
I would say if you're starting out, forget everything your parents have told you. Forget everything the education has told you, education system's told you, because it's all irrelevant, right? Every belief that you've inherited comes from a different generation. This generation has changed completely, right? Yeah. The way money works today, the way financial structures work today, everything is different. Nothing is fundamentally the same. But there is one overriding principle that hasn't changed. If you know how to add value in this world, you always make money. So figure out how to add value.
Okay.
And the way to figure out how to add value is to first and foremost get yourself a skill set. Okay?
Okay.
Doesn't have to be the most fantastic skill set in the world. It could be photography. It could be social media. It could be something around art. It could be something around becoming a baker or a chef. It really doesn't matter. Get a skill set.
Huh.
Get something that you could always come back and fall back on. So my boys is an example. When they get to 18, I will encourage them to learn how to lay bricks, to do plumbing and electrical. My daughter, I'll encourage her to do some kind of soft skill set, like maybe graphic design, social media, something, right? But a quick skill set, maybe a year or 2 years in. No degree, because I don't think kids should leave at 18 and go to get a degree. Because by the time they're 20, their minds change.
Yeah.
So get a soft skill set, something that no matter where you go in the world, it'll allow you to earn an income. Then what I would do is I would go for what I classify as a very generalist qualification. But something that's very relevant. And my preference would be an MBA, right? Get an MBA because it teaches you business, teaches you finance, teaches you economics. And even if you took the hairdressing course to become a hairdresser, you'll be a hairdresser with an MBA.
Right.
So you'll eventually be able to run and scale up a business.
That's right.
Or potentially run a chain of hairdressers.
Yes.
Right?
That sounds like it.
And even if that doesn't materialize, you can always fall back to being a hairdresser.
Mm.
So You've got the skill set, and then you've got the knowledge on how to amplify that skill set. Then I would go and I would say, this is my most important personal finance thing that I would tell the youth. Spend as little as you can for as long as possible. Okay? Mm. Go and spend, if you can get by on nothing, if you can live at home for 5 or 6 years, bank everything you can. Give yourself a foundation. Give yourself a head start.
Right.
Okay? And then don't take that money and then go and buy a house. Because that's what your parents thought was a good idea.
At the time, yeah.
Take that money and go and buy an apartment and put somebody else in there as a tenant. Right? And use their money to buy the things that you want.
Okay.
Get away from spending money off a primary source of income. The reason why most adults, it is so hard to change the course of their direction, because they have made debt on a primary source of income. And if that primary source of income fails, they're going to fail. Right? So kids have the opportunity to get money, deploy that into something that's going to make money while they're living at home, get to a point where there's enough money coming in that it covers all their living expenses. So they're no longer money slave, right? And then advance their career and make real money. And then I'd give one final piece of advice. This is going to be really strange coming from a money guy. Life is short. We take our life expectancy to 70 is the average. If you're in your 20s, you've potentially got 50 summers, 50 winters, 50 springs, 50 autumns. Don't make everything about the money. Focus on the money. Be good at the money. But understand something, that life is also about being happy, and figure out how to be happy without money. Go for a walk barefoot. Get the sun on your back. Spend time with people you love and care about. Because at the end of the day, that's something money can't buy, and it brings you happiness. And money without the happiness is empty.
Is empty.
And happiness without the money is a headache. So you need both.
You need both.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My next question is, in your opinion, what is the next best thing?
In terms of what?
In terms of the business world. You're definitely a man with vision in terms of business. So what would you say would be the next best thing?
In terms of what the next big thing is, I focus on being the best version of myself, my businesses, and we'll adapt. Having said that, I am a futurist.
Definitely.
I live 4 years in the future. And my business partners will tell you, I have no idea what day of the week it is. I have no idea what year it is most of the time. I live 4 years in the future. I see the problems before they happen. I see the changes before they happen. I think we're moving into a world where people who do not have a good skill set are going to be obliterated. You need to be in a position where you have something of value to offer the world. Because if you're an average person, you're going to be replaced by technology. The receptionist will be done away with. The person who does transcription will be done away with. The doctor who's just a GP, I call them the flu doctor, is going to be done away with. You're going to go to the pharmacy, put your finger in. It's going to diagnose you quickly on your blood and tell you exactly what's wrong and give you a script and give you the medication. The world is changing. And so, for me, it comes back to the thing of I'm less concerned about what the change is going to be. I'm more concerned about making sure I'm very equipped to deal with that change. That means keep your skill set at its peak. Keep learning. Keep growing. I am 45 right now, and I'm still reading and consuming and studying more stuff than anybody I know. I've studied in the last 5 years alone. Two very deep courses around quantum physics, mechanical engineering, and algorithms and financial modeling. And I'll do more stuff in the next year and the next year and the next year. You cannot fall behind. And this is a mistake that a lot of elderly people make. As soon as we get into our 40s, we stop wanting to learn, right? That's when you need to be learning the most.
Absolutely.
And so I think there's going to be huge advancements in the medical field. I think life expectancy is going to go up big time. People growing their own food is going to become a big thing. I think vertigrow, growing food in small spaces, is going to be a big thing. I think the old trades are going to come back. We're going to look for people who've got real skill sets to be artisans, to be bricklayers, to build stuff, because everybody's sitting behind a computer today. I think the next big push forward is going to be the old traditional stuff that's kind of become unpopular, like the farmer, the bricklayer, the plumber, the electrician. There's huge industry to be taken there. I think we have to accept that in terms of the global economy, the dollar is going to go through change. A lot of things are moving east. And maybe it's time to start learning to speak Mandarin if you want to be really competitive as a world.
Okay. Thank you so much. In your opinion, how long do you think it'll be before the middle class is completely wiped out in this economy? What do you think?
We're already there.
Do you think we're already there?
I think we're already there. The average person driving a car and living in a home is entirely indebted to the bank, is entirely dependent on the financial system, has no sovereignty, has no independence, is dependent on a job. The very notion of being in the middle class is not just being able to have a toaster, a microwave, and a fridge.
Yeah.
It's having some money in the bank, having enough savings for retirement, having a financial plan and structure in place that when you turn 65, that you'll actually be financially okay. I can tell you that 80% of people hitting 65 now are not financially okay. And I tell you 100% of people in the next couple of years will not be financially okay. Because we are enslaved in a system that pushes consumption. And so we consume more, the more we earn, the more we consume. And what's happened is we've had this high rate of inflation that's happened. Middle class living has become more and more unattainable. Yesterday's middle class is today's relatively rich. And the best example I can give of this, if you go look at the top 1% of earners, what they can afford today, and you go back and you look 10 years ago. And I always represent this in cars because it's a great example. Okay. 10 years ago, the top 1% could afford to drive a BMW X5.
Okay.
Today, they can only afford a BMW X1. So what it tells you is that our money's buying less. It tells you that the cost of inflation, everything's costing more. But part of the problem is that we're consuming it at healthy levels, right? And I actually believe the new middle class is going to be those who grow their own fruit and veg, who have their sovereignty and have their independence and have figured out how to get off the grid. And I'm not talking just the electrical grid. I'm talking every grid, the medical grid. I'm talking about the government grid, figuring out how to truly be sovereign, right? And you can go from where we are right now and go to another developing economy, like, let's say, Thailand, and your money's going to buy you infinitely more, and you'll be very middle class soon, right?
Okay.
And so you're going to see this thing of migration patterns of the traditional middle class going to places like Thailand, going to places like Indonesia, and seeking out a better way of life for a cheaper cost of living. But the middle class, as we know it, has already been obliterated. Your friends that tell you they're doing okay, they're not doing okay. Your friends who've just bought a new car and you're envious of them, don't be envious of them, because the bank owns a car, right? They haven't got enough money for retirement. The first bit of medical drama that happens in their family, they're having to take up loans. This problem is severe. And we are moving from a place of you either have or you don't have. The middle class, it's gone. It doesn't exist. And that which we see as middle class is a complete and utter facade at this point. It's an illusion.
What are some of the habits or practices that you have found to be most helpful for personal, professional, and financial growth?
Exercising emotional control. It is the single most important thing you can learn. If you can teach your kids to exercise emotional control very young, don't take that sweet. Don't take that money. Don't eat that sugary thing. Don't get angry. Don't get overexcited. You will set them up for life. Emotional control is about controlling your life. You make bad financial decisions because of emotions. You marry the wrong person because of emotions. You have kids at the wrong time because of emotions. You get into bad business deals because of emotions. We're emotionally led creatures. So switch over to the other side of the brain and only exercise logic. And this is why I love numbers. Because numbers tell the truth. You can tell me what's important to you. Show me your bank statement. Let me analyze it by expenditure and I'll tell you what's really important to you. Where you spend your money is a reflection of what's really important to you. It takes emotion out of it. It's pure logic. So learn to be a logical human being. And it is something that is in short supply today. People are not logical. They say common sense. I don't know why they call it common sense. It's not common. Sense is not common.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. So guys, if you enjoyed this episode of the Hustle Podcast, please make sure you hit that subscribe or follow button on your favorite podcasting platform. And if you are finding value from this content, please be sure to leave us a rating. We really do appreciate it. It helps get this podcast out there and helps new people discover this amazing content.
This episode was brought to you by MoneyTribe21.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.